my name's John Dennis. It's Thursday, the 15th of January. Today, the Russian billionaire and former KGB agent Alexander Lebedev is to buy London's Evening Standard newspaper. Also today, the British government moves to distance itself from George Bush. The Foreign Secretary says the use of the term the War on Terror was a mistake and may have been counterproductive. And how some schools are hothousing pupils to shin their way up the GCSE league tables.
Guardian Daily with John Dennis from guardian.co.uk.
But first, here's Sandy Waugh with today's news headlines and the papers.
Heathrow will have a third runway, the government will announce today. The Prime Minister will defy environmental critics and local opposition, but it will have to go through a planning inquiry. The details will be outlined by the Transport Secretary, Geoff Hoon, in Parliament, along with concessions that have been won by opponents in the Labour Party. A rail hub will be built at Heathrow to link it to intercity lines. The Minister will promise the expansion will not break European rules on noise and air pollution. In Cairo, the Egyptian government is said to be close to a deal for a 10-day ceasefire with Hamas, the Palestinian group running Gaza. An Israeli negotiator is now on his way to the Egyptian capital. Meanwhile, the UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon, who's been in Egypt, is on his way to Israel. Palestinians say more than 1,000 people have now been killed in Gaza in the fighting. The plan is for a temporary ceasefire while longer-term negotiations go on. In the USA, Barack Obama's nominee for Secretary of State in charge of Foreign Affairs, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, is expected to be approved by Congress today. Clinton has been appearing in front of a confirmation hearing of her fellow senators this week. Both Democrats and Republicans said last night they see no problem in endorsing her for the new job. Clinton's argued for a clear break with the Bush administration policy, especially on the Middle East. The British Foreign Secretary David Miliband's also made a clear break with the past. In an article in today's Guardian newspaper, he writes that the policy of war on terror was a mistake that may have caused more harm than good. He says it was misconceived because the West cannot kill its way out of the threat it faces. We'll have a commentary by our diplomatic editor shortly. School league tables are published today. There's been a leap in the number of children being entered to take their GCSEs early. But the figures also show more than 370,000 children are being taught at underperforming secondary schools. One in seven schools failing to ensure that at least a third of their pupils get five good GCSEs. There'll be more on this later in Guardian Daily. Almost all the papers choose different front page stories today. On top of its Miliband scoop, The Guardian also reports that a billionaire former KGB agent, Alexander Lebedev, is to buy the London Evening Standard newspaper today. The Financial Times publishes a draft report by the Communications Minister, Lord Carter, which says every household in the country should be guaranteed broadband internet access. The Times also offers a story based on a government leak. It says that taxpayers will be asked to fund loans for car buyers. This is the substance of how government will help support the industry during the recession. Three papers do share one story, the dismay, as Trade Minister Baroness Shriti Vadera told a news conference that she saw the green shoots of recovery in the economy. Minister shoots herself in the foot, crows the Mail. There was widespread dismay, says the Telegraph, and the Independent simply lists the bad economic news that also happened yesterday. Nearly 10,000 jobs go, FTSE plummets 5%, more bad news from banks, another shopping giant faces collapse. On the back pages, the most common story is Manchester City's massive bid for Milan's football star Kaká. The figures mentioned go from 90 to more than £100 million, and The Express calls it the daddy of all deals because it depends on the agreement of the Brazilian's father. More on the day's news and breaking stories at guardian.co.uk.
Alexander Lebedev is poised to buy the London Evening Standard. He'd become the first Russian oligarch to own a British newspaper. The takeover follows a year of talks with the paper's current owner, Lord Rothermere, chairman of the Daily Mail and General Trust. In a moment, we'll hear from Luke Harding, The Guardian's Moscow correspondent. But first, Media Guardian's Mark Sweeney explains Lebedev's interest in the Standard.
Well, Lebedev's an interesting character. In some senses, he's a traditional Russian oligarch. Him and his son clearly have a lot of money. But he's also quite a political figure. He owns several newspapers in Russia. And he has had a look at the Evening Standard over a course of about a year, he actually published once a quite an interesting letter in the Evening Standard where he criticised a piece of editorial that they wrote for saying that him and his son were here as sort of party animals. They hang out with the right sets, they have these big parties, they know Anna Wintour and the Elton John's black and white tiara ball. And he wrote a letter in saying, look, you know, in Russia there are a lot of issues with being able to get a viewpoint across. You might want to see our parties as a lot more than that. They get us in a good position, we have a political view, and that's how we like to use things like events. And
Mark, you mentioned Lebedev's son, Evgeny. He lives in London, and he was involved in negotiations at the end of last year with Lord Rothermere, the owner of the Evening Standard. What happened?
Well, as far as it's understood, they did sit down, they did have conversations about it. It's a little bit unclear as to whether or not, that there was certainly no formal offer made, but perhaps there was a mulling period, some interest, it was still on the table. This went right up until Christmas, and it's now emerged that actually there is a blueprint there, and they want to take 76% and they want to do a deal.
And why does Daily Mail and General Trust PLC want to sell the Standard?
Well, Rothermere is understood to be quite close to it. As far as I understand it, a few years back, he actually worked on it, I think, in a role similar to managing director. So he sort of cut his teeth when he was a lot younger. It's quite close to it. It's been around for a long time. He's been referred to by people I've spoken to as a proper publisher, doesn't want to sell things off willy-nilly to whoever might come along. However, it's true of all newspapers and the market in general, a mixture of cyclical and structural factors, readership going online, younger readers with wider interest, not so interested in newspapers, and an advertising downturn. Now, Daily Mail and General Trust is quite a diversified company. However, there's the Evening Standard, there's London Light, there's Metro in the morning, there's the London Paper in the afternoon, which is News International.
These other papers are all being free of charge in London. The Standard's the only pay-for daily London paper.
It is. So it's quite a portfolio. While the Evening Standard is a very important product for Daily Mail and General Trust, it is loss-making, and there's a war going on out there, and not everyone's going to survive, so you need to look at different options.
And what might a future owner of the Evening Standard do to turn it around?
Well, he's got a lot of money, and he's made a comment, it's a good way to waste money. You can make money in other areas and doing other business. I mean, he's got 30% in Aeroflot. So he's not walking into it looking to turn it around into a big money-making vehicle, which is probably good news. However, he would almost certainly want to, despite perhaps saying otherwise, have more editorial influence, maybe change the focus a wee bit, likely to see some staff move, potentially.
How might the entry of Alexander Lebedev into the British media picture as a newspaper owner change the complexion of British newspapers?
Well, in this day and age, in this market, deep pockets has got to be a good thing. I mean, an analogy which could be drawn, I guess, would be something like a Roman Abramovich with a Chelsea. Plenty of money to flash around, might bring it up a few notches, give it a bit more security. Yeah, it's likely to be more money in a market that's quite short of it.
Mark Sweeney. Well, Luke Harding's in Moscow. Luke, Mark mentioned Roman Abramovich there. Does Alexander Lebedev have much in common with the Russian oligarchs who've become familiar names in the UK?
Well, that's an interesting question. I asked Lebedev this over actually a very congenial lunch earlier this week over a sort of plate of pasta and octopus. And he was quite, not exactly sneering, but he was quite dismissive of this. He basically says that his reasons for buying the Evening Standard are essentially kind of idealistic, altruistic almost, and that he's got nothing in common with Roman Abramovich or Alisha Usmanov, you know, who bought Chelsea and Arsenal respectively. He said that, you know, Chelsea was merely a money-making machine, whereas the Standard was an altogether more noble project, and that while he wasn't going to meddle in British politics, journalism was very important, and pointed out the distinction between journalism in Britain, which is essentially free, and in Russia, where it isn't, and where he's had all sorts of problems starting up newspapers, one of which has been forced to close. He says that, you know, the media landscape in Britain is very healthy and one that we really shouldn't take for granted.
What is he like as a newspaper proprietor? Because he owns the liberal Moscow newspaper whose correspondent Alan Politskovskaya was assassinated in 2006.
That's right. He's the part owner with Mikhail Gorbachev of Novaya Gazeta, which really is one of the last few free newspapers here. It's regularly critical of the Kremlin. It writes about corruption. It writes about Chechnya and other kind of taboo themes. So yes, I mean, he is a newspaper publisher. He's not, I have to say, he's not in the kind of loud, sort of shouty, thuggish mode. He's rather a softly spoken man. He speaks excellent, kind of fluent English, which he learned from the KGB, which of course is another kind of irony about this story. He was basically working in London in the 1980s in the Soviet embassy as a member of the KGB's Foreign Intelligence Directorate. Officially, he was the economics attaché, but one of his jobs every morning was to actually plough through the British newspapers, a bit like you, John. He would kind of ransack them for signs of the demise of capitalism and cable back to Moscow.
Very
and of
similar
course, one of
me.
The papers he read was the Standard, which now, 2 decades later, he's buying.
So he was in the Soviet embassy in London?
Yeah, he was sitting in Kensington, and he would come in, you know, he'd make himself a cup of coffee, and he'd read the British press, and that was obviously an important source of information. But after that, he went back to Moscow, and he got rich. In fact, rather unkindly, he's been nicknamed the spy who came in for the gold. He went into banking in the 90s, made a fortune. I have to say, he's a very clever man. He's an economist. He has a PhD in classical economics. And I think what distinguishes him from other oligarchs is that he has a philanthropic side. He's interested in theatre. He sponsors that. He's funded a cancer hospital in St. Petersburg, which treats kids with cancer free of charge. He owns a potato farm. He doesn't have a yacht or a plane. He doesn't strike me as someone who's obsessed with money. And I think this kind of altruistic streak is actually very important.
Luke Harding in Moscow, many thanks. And there's full coverage of that story today at mediaguardian.co.uk. Also on The Guardian's website, Salam Pax, the Baghdad blogger, explains why he's returning to Baghdad at guardian.co.uk/Iraq. Mark Lawson considers the revival of Reginald Perrin at guardian.co.uk/media. And Green Living, Leo Hickman, looks into the claim that one Google search needs the same amount of energy as making a cup of tea at guardian.co.uk/environment.
Guardian Daily. News and reports from around the world.
The use of the term war on terror, George Bush's rallying cry first used after September the 11th, was a mistake, and it may have done more harm than good. That's what David Miliband says today in an article for The Guardian. The Foreign Secretary repeats his hard-hitting critique of the Bush worldview today in a speech in Mumbai, in a hotel attacked by terrorists back in November. Our diplomatic editor, Julian Borger, is travelling with Mr. Miliband.
He's saying that basically the use of the war on terror, this all-encompassing phrase to rally the West, in the wake of the September 11 attacks, was a mistake and possibly counterproductive and possibly did more harm than good. And in so doing, he delivers quite a devastating critique on the foreign policy of the Bush administration, which is, as we know, has got 5 days left to run.
To what extent is this a devastating critique of the Tony Blair administration?
Well, yes, by implication, that too. But the war on terror was never a phrase that British officials, even under Tony Blair, really embraced in the same way that it became the kind of defining mission of the Bush administration. But yes, by criticizing the Bush administration, he does, by implication, also criticize Tony Blair.
And as you say, it is just a few days before Barack Obama is sworn in as American president. The war on terror is not going to be a phrase that we hear from Barack Obama.
No, that's right. They are dropping it. And it's very clear from being around British officials and being around David Miliband that they feel much more at ease with the new administration in terms of the fit for their view of the world and their view of what long-term strategy should be. And in the last few days, even, the relations between the British and the Americans have deteriorated because the British were trying to get a ceasefire resolution through the UN. The Americans said they were going to support it. They changed their minds at the last moment and abstained, and the British are quite bitter about that.
Julian, you're speaking to us from Uttar Pradesh in India. David Miliband is going to be speaking in Mumbai, a city shattered by terrorist attacks at the end of last year. Is Britain offering any assistance to the Indian authorities, keen to prevent any future outrage?
Yeah, I think there is a certain amount of technical assistance, counter-terrorism assistance. David Miliband is also offering his good offices because he will present the case to Islamabad and trying to bridge the divide that there is between India and Pakistan in the wake of the Mumbai attacks, and that has raised tensions and, you know, brought back fears of another Indian-Pakistani war. And so David Miliband is trying to convince Pakistan to take further measures against the group alleged to have been behind the Mumbai attacks, Lashkar-e-Taiba, to the extent that they satisfy Indian public opinion.
Julian Borger. School league tables are published today, along with new figures revealing a leap in the number of school children being entered to take their GCSEs early. Our education editor, Polly Curtis, says it's led to the accusation that some schools are hothousing pupils.
Well, what we found out is that there are now record numbers of students sitting GCSEs early, and they do that so that they have a second and sometimes a third chance to retake the GCSEs. There's kind of two arguments, one for and one against this. The argument for is that you're giving a student lots of opportunities to get the GCSE. The argument against is that you're focusing so intensely on the exam that students aren't really having a proper learning experience, and they're also taking three times as many tests.
And how are students able to take exams early? Are they being hothoused?
Well, that's the accusation from the teaching unions. They say that this pressure amounts to kind of hothousing, and it's about students doing exams 1 year early, so they do it when they are 14, 15 rather than 15, 16, or doing it in November. There's now a November entry for GCSE, so they do it then. And the argument that people are making about this is that people are so fixated by the government's targets and by their place in the league tables that they're now using any tactics they can to just edge pupils over the threshold for results that they need for their school to move up the league tables. Those league tables are also published today, so this is very topical news.
Is it unfair of schools to do this to their pupils? I mean, does it give the schools an unfair advantage over schools that don't do that?
It's very hard to say that you're comparing like with like. Is an A grade that someone had three chances at worth the same as an A grade which someone did in one go? Professor Alan Smithers, who's a very well-respected academic of education, Buckingham University, made that point. He said it was okay to retake tests if it's like a driving license and you just need the skill at the end of it. But if you're trying to compare between students' abilities, it's not fair.
And is it bad for kids?
Well, there's an argument that it spreads the load. If you're not doing tests all at the end or the exams all at one time, you're spreading the load over the 2 years. Or there's the argument that you're making it stressful throughout their schooling. So I think it's down to the individual kid, but the teaching unions are certainly saying that this leads to more stress for children.
And is this practice likely to continue?
Well, the figures we've seen show a 67% rise in early entries just with one exam board this year. There's every sign that this has been increasing very rapidly in the last few years. And these kind of ideas, if they work as they seem to be, spread quickly between head teachers. So it's quite likely it will continue.
Polly Curtis. Today's edition of Guardian Daily was produced by Matt Hayward and Tim Mabey. I'm John Dennis. Thanks for listening.
Guardian Daily with John Dennis from guardian.co.uk.